if we can, we're going to look back in the fifth chapter of the book of Matthew. Just have a few more sections to go before we actually break into the sixth chapter. So here we go. It's a breakneck pace that we are going at. So, but I hope that you enjoyed last week. I know I did, as I got to study more into that and think about that when we were talking about the subject of lust, in particular with the commandment, "Thou shalt not commit adultery." And if you were here, you know we were discussing that phrase, adultery, is so much broader as far as what it's applying to than just a married couple, okay? We talked about how in the Old Testament, God referred to the Israelites, especially in the prophets, as he's condemning them and about to say, hey, you're going to go into captivity. He referred to them as an adulterous generation, an adulterous people. And we gave the description of them being the bride, Israel being God's people, and that they were basically cheating on God by going and worshiping other gods, serving false idols, turning away from his commandments. And so he describes them as an adulterous people. One of the prophets, he ends up commanding that prophet to marry a harlot, okay, a woman of ill report, okay, or a prostitute, to marry this woman. And the prophet's like, you know, again, there's callings that people have, okay. We all sometimes think that maybe our callings aren't what we think they should be. Other people are called to other things, okay? Maybe if you are single, you wish you had been called to be married, okay? Maybe if you're married, some people wish they could be called to be single. Some people wish they were called to be big basketball players. I don't know about any of us who are vertically challenged, but it is a disability, and that's why we deserve some kind of entitlement. But there's callings that people have. Well, this poor prophet was called to marry a prostitute, okay? And you got to imagine that as he gets the, you know, letter in the mail, so to speak, where God says, all right, you're going to be a prophet. And you go, okay, all right, we're looking at like, all right, Zephaniah, Haggai, you know, let's look at some, maybe it's like Jeremiah, you know, from your mother's womb, I have called you out to do this. And he says, yeah, that's good. Now I want you to go marry a prostitute. Okay, not where I thought we were going with this. I thought we were going to go maybe some Jonah and I don't know, baby, but. Okay, so I'm got to marry a prostitute. And he said, yeah, I want you to marry a prostitute because I want you to see how it feels. When the woman that you have given your life for turns her back on you and betrays you. He's like, because that's how I feel with Israel. And then I want you to preach about it. How about that? How about that ministry? But that was that guy's ministry. And so we talked about he wanted them to learn the lesson of your betrayal of me as your God is an adulterous situation. He also talks about in the Gospels as he is preaching to the Pharisees, he says, a wicked and adulterous generation seeketh after a sign. And he says, and no sign will be given unto you but the sign of the prophet Jonas. So he calls the Pharisees, now we're in present day, you know, AD 30, 32, 33, we're around in that time, and he's saying, y'all are a wicked and adulterous generation. So he uses that phrase very broadly. And we talked about lust, and we talked about the first origin of lust, the first place that is recorded in the Bible has nothing to do with a marriage transgression. It has everything to do with Eve lusting after the fruit that was in the Garden of Eden, okay? And so we talked about how that was the original sin that we saw there, and that she lusted after that fruit. She desired it. She looked at it and said, this is a fruit worthy of eating. It's good to look at. It looks like it would be profitable for me to partake in it. And we wanted to drive home the main conclusion of that, which was the lust is an origin of all the other fallings and failings, okay? That as James talks about, that a man is not tempted of God, but that he is tempted of his own lust. And as he lusts after something, it conceives and then it grows and then it brings about death. And I think it's an amazing type that he uses there. He is giving the picture of lust, which involves so many let's say, bodily things, okay? And he's giving you the picture of a body being the manifestation of that lust. It was thought about and looked at, and then it was conceived, and then it was birthed, and then it grew up, and then it died. That's the life cycle of a human being. And he's giving you the life cycle of sin, temptation, and lust. And so he's showing you that ultimately it leads in death. And we talked about that's the same thing that happened with Eve and Adam. They saw it, it conceived, it bore fruit, and they died. Okay, so we have as our very first example of the transgression in the garden, it was dealing with lust. Okay, and so we discussed that. We talked about that it's a manner of looking at things other than what God has already blessed you with. We said that the thing with Eve and what you could get this picture of with Eve is here she is in this garden. We don't know how big the garden is. I'm going to probably just venture out and tell you that it's not some little, like, small, okay, greenhouse kind of a deal. Okay, it wasn't like, okay, I got five trees to choose from, and one of them is the tree of knowledge, and one of them is the tree of life, and, you know, here we go, I'm narrow in my options. No, you get this picture of a vast, you know, landscape with every possible fruit-bearing tree in it, okay? And there's just the two of you. Okay, there's not a big supply and demand problem. Okay, there's just the two of you. And we were discussing the fact that Eve's stumble was that she fixated, because of the temptation of the devil, she fixated on the one tree that she was told she could not have. And it wasn't, I'm telling you can't have it because I'm going to mean and belittling God, and I just like to see you squirm under pressure and see that you can't have this great and wonderful thing I want you to have. No, he knew that it had consequences. And so he said, don't touch it. And she could have just turned around, as we said, you know, stop and smell the fruit trees, okay? Turn around, and if she had just stopped and seen and looked around and taken account of all the multiplicity of blessings that God had surrounded her with, then she would have realized, she would have thought, she would have said, I got everything that I need and then some. I don't need this tree, okay? She saw it, because if we look back in those scriptures, when you look back in chapter 2 and you look at how God made the garden, he says he made a garden filled with trees that were to be desired. The same word that Eve used in desiring or lusting after the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. He said, I made a garden filled with trees that were desirous, that were good for fruit. It's like, so God has all of these other things surrounding Eve that she could have cast her affection on and been filled beyond measure, okay? She would have been able to eat her entire eternal life, okay? If death had not entered in yet, okay? She could have eaten whatever her existence was and never fully conquered that garden, okay? She would have exploded with satisfaction. But instead, what she was looking at was the one tree that she couldn't get. And because of the beguiling of the devil, she was saying, oh, and that's the one thing I've got to have. So we talked about the importance of stopping and smelling the fruit trees. Okay, so not stopping and smelling the roses. I know that's a hard analogy for people to get that I was saying there. Stop and smell the fruit trees. Okay, look around and see that God has already surrounded us and blessed us with everything we need for satisfaction, okay? And that is a lie of the devil, that there's that one thing that you really, really need, okay? So as we continued from that, as you go forward into anger, we talked about anger, we talked about the lust and adultery, and flowing from that, he then goes in to talk about divorce, and you start in chapter 5, verse 31, and he says, it hath been said, whosoever shall put away his wife, let him give her a writing of divorcement. But I say unto you that whosoever shall put away his wife, saving for the cause of fornication, causeth her to commit adultery. And whosoever shall marry her that is divorced, committeth adultery. Now, we're going to maybe get to the next section, but I'll stop right there. So what I want to talk about with this, because again, these are those verses, these are those sections where everybody goes into and it's, okay, well, let's get down and let's nitpick and figure out what exactly Jesus was saying and what divorce is acceptable and what divorce is not acceptable and who's this, and did somebody get remarried and oops, now they've got to get divorced again to get undivorced and all this. Okay, we're not getting into that, okay? Because that's not the meaning of what Christ was teaching here. Christ was not trying to correct a legal issue in the nation of Israel. Okay. In fact, he was doing like the legal issues that they had zeroed in on so hard about adultery and about anger and about how they could get away with it and what was going to be. Well, he's not doing that with divorce. He's not going to undo what he has just been undoing. He's not going to sit there and look at them when they're sitting there nitpicking about, oh, well, thou shalt not commit anger. Well, but what if I kill them and I just kill them by proxy? Or what if I'm really mad at them and I wish them to go to hell and all that? Am I still guilty of thou shalt not kill? They're nitpicking the law, and Christ says, you got a heart issue and you're guilty. Okay? Same thing with adultery. You've got an issue with lust. You've got a heart issue. No, you did not physically enter into that action with that woman, but you were lusting after her with your heart. You got a heart issue. You're guilty. Okay? Well, he's not going to reverse that and go, oh, and by the way, let's clarify and make sure we get really legalistic and figure out the exact pros and cons and what we're supposed to do with divorce, okay? That's not what he's doing here. He's saying there's, again, a heart issue with this. He said, and that's what I want to address. So, as you dig into this, what we need to grasp is that a lack of faithfulness to God will lead to a breakdown of human relationships, okay? So, a lack of faithfulness to God will lead to a breakdown in human relationships. Okay? So whereas we lack faithfulness to God, in this case in marriage, it will lead to a breakdown in human relationships. When it's talking about with friends, guess what? It'll lead to a breakdown of relationships. When it talks about with a father and a son, a mother and his daughter, friends, families, neighbors, it leads to a breakdown in relationships. So the point of this is a heart issue surrounding faithfulness to God, not faithfulness to a spouse. Okay? Do we catch that? So that is the heart issue. If we just take this and go, okay, well, when and where and what is divorce acceptable? We've missed the point of what Jesus is talking about here. So we don't want to miss that point. And we don't want to miss the fact that just like anger and lust, we're again dealing with an issue of the heart. And that's what Christ is dealing with all of these. That's why he's trying to draw this out of these people that he's listening, that are listening to him. I want to get at your heart. I want you to start thinking about your heart. Where is your heart in this matter? Because we can go about legal and illegal types of divorce, and you still got two broken people who haven't learned the lesson, which is a faithfulness to Jesus Christ. So if you come away from it and two broken people have divorced over quote-unquote legal grounds and they walk away and they're no more closer to Jesus Christ than you, who cares? What does it matter? So that's why he's really trying to get at with all this. And it wasn't about legalism. So if you want to, though, we do need to kind of, I guess, throw out there something in regards to this. So this is also brought up in Matthew chapter 19. It's referring back to a section of Scripture in Deuteronomy chapter 24. You'll notice when he says here, he says, it hath been said, whosoever shall put away his wife, which is different from what he said in the previous two. You have heard that it was said of them of old time, thou shalt not commit adultery. This was a thing of permission. It was not a law. Okay. So Moses permitted this, as he will talk about in Matthew chapter 19, because of the hardness of the people's heart, okay? It was not part of the law, okay? There was thou shalt not have divorce, or thou shalt have divorce, but in these circumstances, no, it was, that wasn't the case. It was permission, okay? And again, if you think about that, these rules and regulations and laws were given to a nation that was made up of broken people, okay? And so some of these things are applicable in those ways. There's very much cultural things that involved a lot of this as well. But I also want you to note, carry with something with this too. Okay, another reason why when you're talking about divorce and things like that, that there's aspects of this that, again, maybe we will have time sometime, or maybe we'll sit down and we'll go all through it and just get all sorts of knee and neck deep in it and all that you want to, okay? But all of these things in pertaining to the Deuteronomy law, Deuteronomy 24, and what he's talking about, it is a one-way street, okay? It was a man shall put away his wife. You never saw the reverse. Okay? So you have to keep that in mind. This is a specific law example written to Jews. And there was a reason why they were wanting certain things out of Christ about it. Okay? So you don't get that clarification and that depth in this chapter because Christ was not trying to go for that. Okay? He was not standing up here and saying, okay, let's talk about divorce and figure out what's right or wrong. He wanted people to get back to the heart. So in chapter 19, the Pharisees came up to him and said, is it lawful for a man to put away his wife for any cause? Okay? So Paul's right there and think about that. Any cause, referring back to Deuteronomy chapter 24, that gave them permission to put away their wife if they were ever displeased with her or found some kind of displeasure in her. Okay. Now, what was supposed to be kind of intended behind that was that this woman had gone out and committed adultery. Okay. But what the Jews interpreted it as is displeasure can have a whole lot of meaning. Okay, I'm displeased you burnt my food. That was a reason. I'm displeased because you're not as pretty as you were 30 years ago. That was a reason. So you get the picture of why the Pharisees were asking Jesus, because number one, it was permitted in Moses' law. God gave Moses permission to do that. So if Christ came in and said, no, that's not how it's supposed to be, well, then they'd say, well, you're standing against Moses and the law, and now you are against what God had permitted. So what's up with that, you know? And they would have fault to be able to stone him and say, you're just trying to undo the law of Moses. But what Christ did here, and as well as in Matthew chapter 19, is he went back to the heart of the issue and what God really was intending about what should be in a marriage of a man and a woman. Okay? And again, he gets back to the heart because you have an issue there. He was just addressing men divorcing their wives. And what you'd created was a culture where men would just divorce their wives for any reason. Okay, and so that's where this stuff about, well, if one marries another one, it's committing adultery and all this, because what they do is they say, either you're not as pretty as you used to be, so I'm done with you, okay, cast you aside, all right, so you had created this kind of, you would have 5, 6, 7 divorces off of one guy. In Deuteronomy 24, they actually had to say, if you got displeased with this wife, and you divorced her, and then you married another one, and got displeased with that one, and divorced her, you could not go back and remarry the first one, okay. Well, I mean, you just got, you get the complexity of this. And that Jesus wasn't coming back going, okay, well, this is permissible, and this is not permissible, and this is how you address this situation. He was saying, everybody needs to check their hearts. And you wicked Pharisees, the same ones that he looks at and says, how can you escape the damnation of hell? You are an issue of heart. Because what Christ and what God intends is marriage is a joining of the flesh that was represented in Adam and Eve. He's like, so why are you even considering this with this person? Why do you want to just toss this person? If you're so flaky in this, then it speaks to something about your heart. And that's what we need to get at. So the same thing that he was talking about with lust and he was talking about with anger, we want to make sure we recognize here with divorce, and that there is a problem with most marriages that causes these subsequent divorces, and that is a lack of satisfaction and a lack of realization, okay? And that extends beyond marriage. Okay, so again, every single one of these are just as applicable to people who are not married. Okay, so people who have not gotten into this, there is still applications for this, because these same two issues are the same two issues with anger, same two issues with lust, same two issues here, and it's going to go forward on from there. Lack of satisfaction, lack of realization. And if you break that down and you look at it with a marriage, when you look at it as Christ was addressing his people or in Matthew chapter 19 about it, that was their deal. Well, I'm dissatisfied with my wife. I should be able to put her away. And he says, Moses only allowed you to do that because you have a wicked and hard heart, okay? It's your wicked and hard heart that is not satisfied with the gifts that God has given you that is causing that, okay? That's what needs to be addressed. And I can tell you that is the exact same problem with you say 90%. You know, I'm not going to say all of them because there are situations. And again, that's why I don't want to get it. That's why the legality of this compared to the scriptures, you cannot just land on these two verses and go, see, what God said was you can never get divorced. And anybody who's ever been divorced, well, they're just not doing what God said. And if you ever got remarried, well, then you're living in perpetual sin. And no. Okay, back up. Because there's so many other situations, and if you get into 1 Corinthians and you get to other places, there are situations, there's caveats, there's different things that apply. It is a very case-by-case basis.
Yep.
But this is what he wanted to say is universal. Is that if you are relying on your spouse for satisfaction, it's going to fail.
Amen.
Okay?
Amen.
And I will go ahead and show you case study after case study of marriages that have failed because people just got unsatisfied. It's no longer fun anymore. You're not as fun as you were when you were 20. You don't party as hard as you used to. You don't look as good as you used to. You don't cook as well as you used to. I'm not as satisfied with our situation. I'm not satisfied with our house. I'm not satisfied with our money. I'm not satisfied with my career trajectory. I'm not satisfied with the responsibilities I have. I'm not satisfied. I'm not satisfied. I'm not satisfied. That's why men have midlife crises and go out and buy fancy cars or motorcycles or grow beards and things. And, you know, that will never be my issue, but you know, things like that. That's why? Because there's a lack of satisfaction.
Yep.
I think there was a song that said something about that, right? I can't get no satisfaction. Well, that's absolutely right. You cannot get satisfaction based on anything in this world. You cannot be satisfied with anything but Jesus Christ. That's where the breakdown of that human relationship begins. Well, I'm not satisfied with Christ, therefore anything else, any other relationship, any other thing that I'm involved with, I will never reach satisfaction. You can see people with this with their jobs. Okay, that's a very equal opportunity foot stomping. You get with a job, okay? You eventually get to a point with your job because I'm just not satisfied with it anymore. I'm not satisfied with my career. That's why people try to get higher and higher and change jobs and move all over. I'm just not satisfied being where I'm at. Okay? And there's nothing wrong with advancement. There's nothing wrong with promotions. There's nothing wrong with any of that. But again, if you are thinking that when you get to that next level, all of a sudden you're going to be satisfied and all your dreams are going to come true and your life's going to be rosy, it's not going to happen. Give it 10 years. You will be unsatisfied again.
Amen.
And then there'll be nowhere to go. Or then you'll start looking for other avenues to find that satisfaction. And that's when we take that backtrack back to lust. Okay? Heard a really awesome sermon yesterday talking about the problem with men and the issues of having godly courage. And they said, number one, that the number one issue with godly courage is pride. Okay. Pride in self, thinking that you are the end of your existence. But also he said there's two sides of the coin to pride. And one of them is fear and one of them is lust. And he says, you fear what you... Basically, your greatest fear is losing what you lust after, okay? Your greatest fear is losing your greatest lust. So if I lust after success, then my greatest fear is I fear of losing my success. I fear of failure, okay? If my greatest lust is whatever, money, well then I fear losing money. If my greatest lust or the thing that I desire the most is fame, honor, glory, well my greatest fear is going to be losing those things. Which means I'm going to be acting on a self-serving level of trying to satisfy whatever my greatest lust is. Okay, and my greatest fear, okay, which obviously we know fear is the opposite of courage, right? Okay, so my greatest fear is whatever I have as my greatest lust and losing that, which means I'm going to start sacrificing on a lot of different levels to get after it, okay? And if my greatest lust is worldly satisfaction, okay, then my fear is I'm going to lose it. And so the only way I can keep that satisfaction going is by cutting corners in all sorts of different areas of life. If that means that I want to be successful and have millions of dollars, well, then there's going to be some corners I'm going to have to cut. Family is going to have to get sacrificed. Friends are going to have to get sacrificed. There's going to be people in the company I'm going to have to step on, crush, destroy, and obliterate to get to where I want to go. There's going to be things I'm going to have to sacrifice on, okay? all on this altar of satisfaction. If it's this idea of happiness, well, good luck. Good luck with that. Say, well, when we got married, I was just so happy, and now I'm not anymore. It's because you were basing your satisfaction on some kind of endorphin high, okay, that was there for a moment and gone the next week. That's not saying that marriage is not a joyful and a happy institution. I can say, you know, I'm a very pro-marriage person, okay? You know, I often will tell people who are about to get married, I said, look, you know, you'll probably hear 15 different people, mostly older men and their midlife crisis is probably, even around the church, who will come up to you and say, oh yeah, you're happy now, just give it 2 weeks. And then all the gluster of it and the glory will wear off and you'll be just as miserable as the rest of us. And I'm like, well, you know, we're 7 years into it. I'm still pretty much there, buddy. And it's because I'm not basing my happiness off of how pleasing the situation is, how happy we are, how much sleep we get, how many, okay, yeah. All right,
yeah,
if you want to have, okay, because so let's just get real, ideal situations, you know, people talk about, well, you need 8 hours of sleep to feel your best, yeah, that would be great in an ideal world where that would happen, but you know what, there just comes a point that when you put your kid down at 8 o'clock at night, you want just some time, okay, just like maybe it's an hour, maybe it's 2 hours, maybe all you do is go into a coma on the couch, okay, but you want your coma time to yourself, okay. And if I have to get 8 hours of sleep, that means I have to go to bed like right after I put them to bed. I don't get my coma time. And now, you know, so there's just sacrifices that you have to make for that. Okay. But if it was relying on these temporal things for satisfaction and happiness, then they're going to burn to the ground. Okay. You're going to build an amazing house and then it's going to catch on fire. Okay. You're going to build an amazing job and place all your satisfaction in your job and how much power you have at your job. And then guess what? The market's going to crash and your job ain't there anymore. Okay. You're going to feel your security and your protection and your 401k. And then the market's going to crash and it's going to bottom out. And guess what? Oops, you got to work for about 10 more years. So if we're basing our satisfaction on the riches of this world where moth can corrupt and eat and where rust will rust it away, then guess what? We're putting our money in bags with holes in it, okay? So for a husband, you know, wanting that satisfaction, I want that wife is perpetually 20 years old, that has the right numbers, okay? And does the things, everything that you want her to do, she's going to satisfy you to the T. She's going to give you, you know, have your coffee ready for you in the morning before you ever wake up. She's going to rub your feet. She's going to brush your hair. All that. Just have everything just pampered, okay? All right? For the wife, maybe it's that she wants that stellar provider who also looks like, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger or whatever. Maybe not. Wants him to stay looking attractive, gets a little bit, you know, hey, you know, you don't have the hair that you used to have, all right? Wants you to still, this is probably the one that gets a lot, wants you still to be quote-unquote fun-loving, okay? Well, as you've gotten more older and you've had 3 or 4 kids and you've got all this responsibility, you're a drag now. Not as fun as you used to be. We used to hit the bars every night. Now look at us. I mean, you're just not as fun as you used to be. Maybe you read your 20th Nicholas Sparks novel. You're just dreaming of that night in North Carolina. The problem is satisfaction, and it's not going to come from anything that we have in this world, okay? Nothing in this world. Everything in this world is going to continually keep us unsatisfied. And it's also interesting that if you think about, there's always another level of satisfaction, okay, yep. Right?
Yep.
So you want the greatest thing, and then you'll get it. And then guess what? There's the next greatest thing. It kind of is boggling to mind if you think about it, because once you reach the greatest, how can there be another greatest thing? Doesn't that kind of... I mean, when you get to the pinnacle of the mountain, there is no more pinnacles. That's it. You're at the top. Okay? You've reached the top of the mountain. The only other direction is down. Okay? You can't keep going up the mountain. And there's not another mountain on top of that mountain. There's just the pinnacle. So when we've reached the greatest, somehow we have this fallen thing in our nature where there's always the next greatest thing. I've reached the greatest, and now I'm not satisfied anymore. I need the next greatest thing. All you have to do is look at our iPhones, and you'll see that. Okay, you get the iPhone 6, the greatest iPhone there's ever been, until 6 months later when there's an iPhone 7. It's the next greatest iPhone with really no changes except the case, and yep. Somehow they sell you on it again. But it's the next greatest thing. Okay. You know what that is? That is lack of satisfaction right there in front of us every single day. That's why we get the ads on TV that we get, okay? That's why you get all these brochures and pamphlets and things on Facebook about how much weight you need to lose, okay? And how if you just take hydroxy cuts, you're going to get there, okay? Or if you just use one of those little things that, you know, shock and electrocute your abs, you're going to have the six-pack abs, and then you got to get your weight trainer, and then you got to get your Norflex, and then you got to get your Bowflex, and then you got to get all these things, because all these things breed that you are not satisfied with who you are. So we as humans are never satisfied. We are always hungering for some new and more exciting prospect just around the corner. And that's what you go back to Eve with lust and where she was at. I'm not satisfied. I have everything. I am in control of everything. I have all of these trees. I've got all of these different fruits. Okay? I'm just not satisfied. And secondly, it's the lack of realization that our satisfaction comes, or our lack of satisfaction comes from a lack of realization. We don't realize what we already have. And we were kind of talking about this with marriages in last week's discussion, that, you know, if the man that just wants to run out because he's just not satisfied anymore, if he just turn around and look and go, you know, we're talking about, oh, how boring life has gotten. 40 years now we're in our marriage and it's just boring. I fall asleep in the same bed. I wake up next to the same woman and it's just the same routine over and over again. And I get up at 6 and I go to work and I come home and it's the same thing and it's Jeopardy again. And, you know, all this stuff over and over and over and over and over again. I just want something different. I just want some spice. I want some excitement. We were talking about it's a lack of realization of what you have had for the last 40 years. Yes, I have woken up next to the same beautiful woman for 40 years. Yes, I have been able to see 3, 4, 5 amazing children that God blessed me with that not everybody else gets blessed with. Some of the kids never come to be, period. Some people don't have kids. Some people have kids and lose their children. And I've had these kids through life. What an amazing blessing. I have a house over my head. I'm not sleeping in a mud hut. And I'm sleeping on the ground. I have all of this. I have a wife that cooks me. Yes, maybe we have these same 5 foods that we eat on a repeating basis. But you know what? Every single one of them is good. And you know what? I can't think of anything else I would rather have. You get too exotic and it just doesn't work out. Or maybe you burn the bacon or something and life gets a little bit dicey. But, I mean, you think about all of these things and you look and you go, I realize I've got so much. But it's that lack of realization, just like with Eve. Oh, yes, I've got all this stuff. I've been blessed immensely. I have need of nothing. But, oh, what's that around the corner? Oh, what's that over there? Oh, what could it be like if? And what we have to remember is what it could be like is death. That's what you're missing, okay? That's what's not part of this perfect scenario, is you're not dead. Isn't that a nice thing? Shouldn't we be excited about that? You haven't died because of your silly, irrational lust. Realize where we're at. So if we go back to the same argument that Jesus uses in Matthew chapter 19, talking about this lack of realization, you know, when you look at Matthew chapter 19, he makes the place, or makes the argument in that place. He says, "And he said unto them, Have ye not read that he which made them at the beginning made them male and female, and said, For this cause shall a man leave father and mother, and shall cleave to his wife, and the twain shall be one flesh. Wherefore they are no more two, but one flesh. What therefore God hath joined together, let no man put asunder." What Jesus is doing is going back to the beginning and saying man and woman would come together as one. Okay? And so he makes that point of, number one, when things are made to be one, it's really hard to make them into two again. Okay? So get 2 little drops of water and join them together. Try to separate them. It's a lot more difficult. Okay? Or to go weld 2 pieces of metal together. Try to cut them back apart. It's much more difficult. Okay? But beyond that, of just the, you know, I guess the practicalness of that, look also at this. God said what about man when he made woman? What did God say about man when he made woman? Before that, He said, why did I need to make woman? It was not good that man was alone. There was something in man's created perfection that even God looked at and said, you need somebody. Now, there's a lot of really funny things you can run down on that, okay? All right. But you need somebody. I, God Almighty, who just created you, realize you need somebody. And he made the specific helper for him. And again, the help meet, okay, the helper that was meet for him, the helper that was fit for him, it was basically his way of saying that the thing that you are lacking, I'm about to create, and it's perfect for you, okay? You've looked out on all these animals, the duck-billed platypus doesn't fit the bill, okay? The brontosaurus or whatever over here, that doesn't fit the bill, okay? The woolly mammoth doesn't even fit the bill, okay? But I'm going to make you the perfect fit for you. Because it's not good that you're alone. And again, you have to question and wonder and run down that road. Well, why was it not good? What did God see? Why did he do that? I don't know. All I know is that the God of the universe said it wasn't good for me to be alone. So he made Eve for Adam. And he made her to be the perfect fit for him. And those two became one. So now that you have the half and half come together to make the one, okay, he was missing his better half, okay, we'll say it like that. So when we talk about that and talking about realization of satisfaction, you realize that if you have been called to marriage, okay, and that's something that, you know, again, you look at 1 Corinthians, you look at what Paul says in 1 Corinthians, he says it is a gift for some, it's not a gift for everyone, okay. In the ending of chapter 19, the apostles, as they're talking to Jesus, as he's kind of teaching, you know, they're like, I mean, it would be better if a man wasn't married based on what you just said. And Jesus said, to whom this is given is who can receive this. Okay? Now, some people it's not given to. Some people it is given to. Some people it is given to that they are to marry. Some people it's not. Okay? And God didn't say that one calling is greater than the other one. If you get married, you're here on this level in the kingdom of heaven. If you don't, well, then here you go. You're just a subhuman. You're not part of the big scheme. And it's just, well, you just didn't work out right. No. Everybody called in their callings for their gifts that God gave them, for their purposes that God gave them to do. Okay? Paul, you know, you run down the scenarios of Paul said it was good that he was single for whatever his reason was. Okay, maybe it was if you really look at just the practicalities of it, it would be really hard to hop from Jerusalem to Tarsus to Ephesus to Galatia to Corinth to go if you're carrying your family with you. Okay, maybe that's what his reasoning was. Maybe it was good that he was able to be single, to be able to traverse the globe and spread the gospel and not have to be worrying if the next Roman soldier is going to kill him and his wife. Okay, maybe that was it. I don't know. But he was single and he said it was good and he said it was a calling of God and that's where he was called. And he says, and some men are gifted in this way and some men are not. And you should glorify God in whichever gifting you're in. But he says, this is what we want to gain as far as for you. That if you have been given a wife, if you're blessed in that, realize that this is just like with Adam and Eve. You needed this. Okay, God obviously saw that you needed this and he works in his sovereign way in both of those people's hearts. If they're both seeking after God, if they're both looking to God as their helper, he works in their heart and he knits them together in a way that is perfect, just like Adam and Eve. Okay, that there's a lacking in that. And that if you look at the really, I mean, the marriages of people that you could look at and say they are really, truly godly, honoring people who are focused on the Lord, you see that. You see how, man, if he was left alone, oh my goodness, okay? You know, I look at it in the times that maybe I get away from Emily and I go to a conference or something like that, and then I come back and it's flipped in the reverse, okay? I can last for a day maybe, okay? I think she just has a double gifting because, you know, some mean person would leave her for like 2 weeks with this. Somehow she survives. Glory be to God. Because I look at it and I'm like, oh my goodness. If Emily ever left me. So I definitely recognize the need that is there. And it's one of those things that when you're single and you're following God, it's one thing. And once you get married, it's another thing. It's like, how did I ever do life before this? That's something that we always tell. Again, we tell young people who are getting married, it's like everybody's like, oh, well, when you get married, it's putting two sinners under the same house and you'll have all these troubles. And we argued about which end of the toothpaste to push up and all these things. And we got so mad about how you should put this soap here and that soap there. And all, I'm like, dude, maybe there's some things you need to let go, brother. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. If you are so freaked out about the toothpaste, maybe you need some counseling. Okay. You do know that from the middle or the end, it gets out. Okay. Eventually. And here's the thing, all the people who push from the middle, guess what? Sometime you got to go to the end, because if you're just pushing from the middle, eventually you'll get there, okay? So I know there's like some OCD people in here that are going, oh, no, you don't understand. It's from the end every time, and it's got to be crinkled at 1/4 intervals, and but, okay, I get it. I know, grace be on you as well, okay, I get it. But if that's something you're going to blows over, then I'm not sure if it's that necessary, okay? Not sure if it's that necessary. But when we looked and told people, we're like, hey, you know, actually it was easier. It's a really nice thing. You know, before I was alone all the time. Guess what? Now I'm not. It's really fun. I've got my best friend. We agree on the same things. We like each other. We can sit and watch movies. Much more fun watching a movie with someone cuddle up next beside you than it is by yourself, okay? That's always a fun thing, okay? It's good. People love company. That's why we always have friends over and have parties, okay? We like being around people. Here's someone with me all the time. It's like when I'm doing laundry, it's like I can do half of it and then she does the other half, and that's great. Some nights I cook, some nights she cooks. Well, that's perfect. I mean, this is a very great situation. So I don't know why we're looking at this like ball and chain, 2 weeks, miserable, the rest of my life I'm hampered. No, I see like I've got a person who is now bonded with me and says, for the rest of your life, I'm going to help you out. I look at that as a positive. Okay? So that's why when you take that God said, it's not good for you to be alone, I can realize and go, oh yeah, God, because I know how it was, and I'm glad you put someone with me. Okay? So it's important for us to make sure we do that we stop when we smell the fruit trees. Obviously, you think about Adam, you know, and you think about his life and you think about where he came to and you think about how she was made for him. So much so that like the first poetic verse, okay, in the whole Bible is Adam spouting out this, you know, song that he's like freestyling here of bone of my bone, flesh of my flesh, you know, all this stuff. I mean, he's singing almost, okay, because God has made him this perfect help for him. Okay, so in conclusion with that and talking about what we're seeing here with this divorce issue, the stopping and smelling the fruit trees and enjoying and understanding the nature of it is that the heart is where the issue is. And the first thing that we have to do is get our hearts right when we're talking about with our spouses, okay? Our hearts ultimately being wed to Jesus Christ, and then the marriage will fall in line to that, okay? Faithfulness to God, faithfulness in His call, and this is how that manifests. If I'm faithful to Jesus in my marriage, that means when Jesus says, husbands, love your wife like I love the church. Well, then my faithfulness in that is that I love my wife sacrificially like Christ loved the church, which means there's no more me time, there's us time, there's no more, well, I want to do this and I don't care what you want. No, there's none of that. You cut that out of your life, just like we were talking about the lust issue. There's no more of that. Well, that just doesn't sound like fun. Well, no, I'm telling you that on the other side of that, you got the whole garden, brother, okay? There's a lot more things you're going to have a lot more fun with than the little, I get to go do my me time in my man cave and whatever thing, okay? Because I'm telling you what, hanging out with your buddies is not nearly as fun, okay? But the same thing with the wife in reverencing and loving her husband. The same reverse, it's the same, it works both ways. And if she is being faithful to Jesus Christ and I'm being faithful to Jesus Christ, then the other stuff can fall underneath that. And the problems aren't as big. The fights are not as big. The issues are not as big because we're all under that thing of Jesus Christ. And that's where, you know, we talk about cleaving. That cleaving literally means to join together. So if I quit trying to look and try to find satisfaction everywhere else and realize the satisfactory thing is joined to me, that is my satisfaction. I had this whole half of me that I needed satisfied. And you know what? It got knit together with the perfect thing that God instituted for it to be knit together with. And in that, I truly find satisfaction in that. And ultimately, we find our satisfaction in Jesus Christ. And we cleave to Him as our bride, okay? As we are His bride, we cleave to Him. There's so many levels on this. And the next thing it'll go into, it'll talk about oaths. And we'll kind of get into that next time very briefly. It's not something too in-depth. It follows very much along with the same thing with marriage, about what is the heart issue, why are we wanting this, and what's ultimately the problem. So hopefully we'll be able to continue to look at this.